I'm looking at a bizarre video of an alien that somebody just sent me. It really is strange. I may send it up to Sean or Lex and have them take a look at it. It's kind of frightening to tell you the truth. I'll let them monitor it. Somehow I'll get you the link, Sean. I'll be back in a moment with Peter Davenport and your questions on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Peter Davenport. Peter, right during the break last hour, you had some kind of story come into you. Why don't you tell us about it before we go back to the calls?
Yeah, it's a report that was just submitted from Alaska about the bottom of the hour, just a half an hour ago, from a person who apparently saw something up in Alaska on the evening of the 7th, I think it was, of July. And the reason it caught my eye, George, is that it occurred just about within 5 or 10 minutes of the event in Boise, Idaho. The gentleman writes that he saw a couple dark objects in the sky over Alaska. And when you take into consideration the two-hour time difference between Alaska and Boise, Idaho, you quickly realize that the individual was describing something up there that he allegedly had seen, and it's food for thought. That's about all I can say at this stage. I'll correspond with the individual and see if we can get more accurate information, maybe another report from another witness up there. That always makes a big difference to us. But I just thought it was sort of interesting that we have people reporting something up in Alaska at about the same time that something very major, apparently, is occurring down in near Boise, Idaho.
What's coming up for your speaking engagements in the future?
Well, I've got a couple things on the docket. The end of this month, July 30th, Saturday night, I'll be speaking at the Museum of the Mysteries here in Seattle, and it's going to be sort of a mixed bag. I've presented my standard PAT presentation, and I think what I'm going to do is just throw the podium open, and so to speak, and just give an extemporaneous summary of what has happened. The reports that I've received over the last 11 years, some of the more dramatic ones, and maybe allow the audience to ask questions, take a few pot shots at me. That's on the 30th of July, and then later in August, I'm going to be speaking in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, at the 50th anniversary of the celebrated Kelly Hopkinsville case that occurred down there in August of 1955.
Oh, this is when they were shooting at these creatures, right? I remember that when I was a kid reading that story.
Yes, I do too. And that story that was reported over the radio stations back then is in part, George, why I probably today, 50 years later, am a full-time UFO investigator.
It was a great story.
It was indeed. And you never knew what to believe back then. You don't know what to believe today. But I remember having heard the story as a young lad, and, you know, it was 3 years prior to that, 1 year prior to that, that I had had my first UFO sighting over the St. Louis airport. So I'm sure that my ears were, they perked up when I heard the story from Hopkinsville, Kentucky. So I'll be speaking down there, and if people would like to attend, they can go to the our website, ufocenter.com, and there are links to the information for both those conferences.
All right, let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Hi there.
Yes, my name is Jeff, and I'm from Chelsea, Massachusetts.
Hello, Jeff. Good to have you with us.
Good evening,
yes,
Jeff.
Indeed. First-time caller. Now, my question, do you think that the UFO phenomenon is mostly military aircraft? And I'm referring to the book Black Helicopters on page 59, where the author believes that this UFO phenomenon is nothing but our government counterfeiting the alien abduction phenomenon.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I can answer straight away, Jeff. I don't accept it for a moment. I'm not familiar with the book that you allude to in your question, but for example, part of the reason I don't accept that is that we have what appear to be very good, very solid, well-documented reports of these things that we allude to today as UFOs out of the 19th century, for example, before the first aircraft flew. And moreover, I don't believe that the military would really, if they even had some of these sophisticated craft, would fly them over the heads of civilians for several reasons. One, it's not their job to scare the daylights out of American civilians.
At least on purpose.
At least on purpose. And number two, what officer in the military is going to allow their super secret billion-dollar or multi-billion-dollar project to fly around civilians, fly over populated areas, thereby breaching the security of the no doubt secret project? Many people make that point, that these things necessarily have to be military hardware, but I don't accept that, and I think the evidence is strongly, it strongly militates against that theory.
Okay, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Los Angeles. A blue light is associated with Satan, and when the space shuttle went down 2 years ago, February, Art Bell's Coast to Coast reported that the space shuttle, there was a photograph of a blue lightning bolt hitting the shuttle. A photographer took that photo in San Francisco, but NASA confiscated that photo. The government knows about these alien abductions. My question is, why don't we call this evil, evil for what it is? Because these people are being abducted against their will. Their symptoms are negative, including pain, nausea, mental confusion, and missing time. And they may be impregnated or have their sperm or eggs stolen and subjected to unknown psychological and medical tests. Yeah. So why don't we call this evil for what it is? It's evil.
Yeah. The caller makes a very good point. And his comments are very consistent with some of the observations by people like Dr. David Jacobs,
yes,
from Temple University in Pennsylvania, who's, I'm sure, been on this program many times, and Bud Hopkins, whom I had the pleasure of meeting with when he was out here in Seattle in early June.
How about Jacques Vallée also? Would he now say that this was evil?
I don't know what his position would be. I hesitate to really speak on his behalf, but the caller makes a very good point. And many people in the field believe that these, I prefer to use the term interactions between aliens and humans, they apparently are taking place. I accept that the evidence looks pretty powerful in support of that position. I accept that most of these, or certainly many of these incidents, are not positive. They're not beneficial to the human beings who apparently participate or are involved in these cases. Whether it's evil or not, I cannot say. We first of all have to document that they're taking place to the satisfaction of everyone, and I don't think we've done that yet. But I can't say categorically that they're necessarily evil incarnate, and after all, it may be a case of angels versus fallen angels, so there may be some good ones among them. I don't know the answer to the question, but the caller raises some very good points with his question.
Peter, I've had a number of guests on over the last couple months, and they talk about how we were seeded, how extraterrestrials came down and did what they did. Are you a believer in that theory?
I don't know enough about it to be able to say, George. I know that people such as Zachariah Sitchin have made this point. A lot of people are suggesting or apparently have concluded that human life, or perhaps all life, was brought to our planet from no doubt distant parts of the galaxy. I just don't know. All of this information I have collected over the last 11 years as director of the new National UFO Reporting Center, notwithstanding, I really do not know what's going on, George, except to say that after thousands or tens of thousands of reports and stories, the likes of which we heard during the first hour of this program, there's very little doubt in my mind, but what's something very extraordinarily unusual is taking place. But so far as I know, I've never seen an alien. In fact, I wouldn't care to see one. based on what I've heard from many people who believe they have. I can't answer the question, and I know I'm sort of just beating around the bush and not answering your question, but I don't have enough information yet to be able to say.
If you want to see a possible alien, take a look at the film we're going to post on the coasttocoastam.com website next hour. I'm not sure what it is, Peter, mm-hmm. but it scares the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, I sort of don't like looking at the images of aliens. I have to be honest with you. It gives me an uncomfortable feeling or sensation for some reason. And I'm not one of those people who worship these creatures. I don't think we have any evidence whatsoever to date that they're going to come here to help man. And I think we have to act on the side of caution myself.
Well, if you use the old Twilight Zone in the film, they're here maybe to serve man.
Yes.
Next up, let's go to our east of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning.
Hey, where are you calling from, sir?
I'm George from Fosteria, Ohio.
Okay, George, go ahead.
I listened to your show earlier. Were those people, did they have this incident last night?
No, the incident occurred on Friday morning, the 8th of July, so it would have been just about 8 days ago now.
Okay, there still may be a chance that something might show up, but if they'll invest in, I'm an abductee myself since 5 years old. I'm 58 now.
Ongoing?
Yes, but anyway, Daryl Sims told me a few years ago about black light and what would show up under it if you'd been handled by an alien.
Yep.
And he was telling the truth. You can take it to the bank. I've got one. When I have suspicions, I look. And if I'm right, you know, there's not much I can do about it. But this family, if they'll invest in a 6-inch black light, battery operated, plug in, whatever,
yeah,
they can go over every inch of those babies and everybody else who was involved, and especially that horseshoe mark on the young man's leg.
What do you see with the black light, George?
Well, if it fluoresces, you will see either a blue or a bluish-green glow.
Huh.
But you have to be in dark.
Yeah.
You have to be in total darkness with a black light to do that.
I believe it was Daryl Sims who may have been one of the first discoverers of this fact. I think one of the things that was recognized is that cattle in a field where a suspected mutilation had occurred, or where a mutilation had occurred that was suspected to be alien-related, oftentimes exhibited fluorescence on their coats, on their hair. And I guess other researchers have posited the notion that the same phenomenon, the same fluorescence, can be seen on abductees. So I compliment the caller. It's a very good point, and that's one of the things that the investigators should look for sure.
Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're up, and where are you?
KBIM, Roswell, New Mexico. My name's Gilbert.
Well, you're in an interesting city.
Well, yes, very much so. I'm born and raised here. But listen, I had a question, George and Peter. The guy, the nephew, said that the craft wobbled.
Yeah.
Took off. And I was just, I was interested in, and is that normal? Because I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. I've heard of cases in which alleged UFOs were suspended in the air, and as they descended, they oscillated back and forth like a maple leaf that is settling to the ground. But that's one of the things that a good investigator would resolve during an investigation. He would interview the party and have him or her try to demonstrate graphically so that another person can understand exactly what that craft looked like and what its motion or its activities appeared to be to the witnesses. I noticed that Jay mentioned that it seemed to rotate to the left and then wobbled a bit, and I don't know exactly what he means by that yet.
Yeah, because that wobble could be either a fluid motion or maybe, like you said, a leaf wobbling.
A falling leaf or a fluttering leaf type sensation, or I just don't know yet. And I haven't met these witnesses. I haven't interviewed them myself, so I'm not in a position to be able to answer that question in any detail.
Peter, have you seen War of the Worlds yet?
I have not. I may go see it, but frankly, George, to To be perfectly honest with you and our listeners tonight,
always are.
I try to be. I work with UFOs all day, every day, 7 days a week, and actually they're not a form of entertainment for me.
Not any. It's like working in a pizza parlor. They don't eat pizza.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, this is Paul from Modesto. How are you?
Fine, Paul.
Good,
go ahead,
Paul.
Sir.
I just want to relate a story to you. I was trying to turn a friend of mine off to your show, told him about what a lot of the subject matter was, and then he proceeded to tell me about an incident he had in the desert years ago in a VW bus with a friend of his who was driving down the road, regular speed, looked in the rearview mirror, saw what he thought was a semi about 5 miles away. He said in an instant, it was a bright light right above the VW, and of course, he's like, at first, these guys are completely sober. He thought to himself, well, wait a second, this guy's trying to run the road.
Yeah.
Then he started to get scared because he realized he couldn't see anything. The light was so bright.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was on the side of him, pacing him, about 200 feet away, about 30 feet off the ground, it was pacing him. He said it was an oblong, egg-shaped object, metallic in color. I'd never seen the color. With a silver light. Anyways, he had a passenger. He woke the passenger up, and they were so scared, the passenger reached his left foot over and put it on top of the accelerator to make sure that they were going as fast as they possibly could through the desert. Well, just to finish the story, my buddy told me by the time they got into the gas station that they were so scared. I mean, it was like, he'd never been that scared in his life. It was pretty much heart attack. They thought they were going to have heart attack. Yep. They didn't move from the gas station for 2 hours.
Yep.
And that's not the only one he's told me. He's been on a deck in Hood, Oregon with a friend of his, ex-Vietnam helicopter pilot. They said they saw a V formation flying through the air at like twice as fast as lightning.
Yep.
And just, seven, maybe eight of them. V formation, one of them stopped in midair, went the other way, triple the times the speed of lightning. His buddy, ex-Vietnam helicopter pilot, estimated the speed of these things at 42,000 miles an hour. Matter of fact, my buddy dropped his iced tea out of his hand, broke the glass. These are just, he's got two witnesses on that one, but I just thought you guys thought that might be interesting.
Yep.
One question I do have, though, talk about this frequently with another friend of mine who claims that he talked to a government op that Roswell is covered up. They said, well, if the public wants to think that it's aliens, we'll let them think it. It's the perfect cover. But his contention is that, look, we have space labs. We've had space stations for 20 years. Don't you think that by now, especially since... I heard your program about a month ago, George, about the one in Peru.
Yes.
The investigations in
yes.
Peru and over in South America. They've had ongoing investigations for all those years. He said, don't you think that possibly even with space stations for 20 years and the stealth aircraft, there could be, something governmental? But I just wanted you guys to hear those stories because this guy, he won't call up and tell. Matter of fact, he told a friend of his in the garage one day, one of his best friends, and the reason he doesn't like to tell that story because the guy just laughed at him and told him.
I understand. That happens, unfortunately. Stay with us. Final phone calls this segment with Peter Davenport on Coast to Coast AM. Boy, in the last couple of weeks, I have seen a couple bizarre movies on cable. I mean, absolutely weird. We're going to talk a little bit about that next hour, and I may even open up, yes, I will, a bizarre hotline so you can check in with some of your very strange stories. Also, Sean is working on posting something that hopefully will be up next hour. Those of you who have computers, I want you to take a look at this short film. It is really something. It is one of the spookiest things I've seen in a long time. We'll be back. We'll take more phone calls with our guest this hour, Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. And welcome back to Coast, Peter. Again, if people see UFOs, what would you like them to do?
Yeah, I'm pleased to field that question, George, and it takes me back to our last caller who was describing these very dramatic sightings out in the southwestern United States. You know, people call here all the time and ask what they can do to help, and my response to that question is there's one thing that people can do immediately that is the biggest help of all, and that is write down their UFO sightings. One of the things that happens, we see it frequently in the UFO field, is people think that by just thinking about their UFO sighting or talking about their UFO sighting, that their job is done. And in point of fact, no UFO report, no UFO sighting is worth anything unless the information is preserved in written form. And many of my friends accuse me of sounding like a stuck record, a broken record on that point. But you have to actually put black ink on white paper to record these events. Just talking about them does no more good than sitting at a red light racing the engine of your car. So that gentleman who called earlier, I would encourage him to go back to his friends and encourage those people to write down their experiences and submit it as a written report. So that's probably the single most important thing that a person can do is preserve those dramatic reports that, or dramatic sightings that we know have taken place. And again, as I pointed out earlier in the program, George, my estimate is that all UFO investigators have succeeded in capturing and preserving only about 1 out of 1,000 bona fide UFO events.
But it's that one, Peter.
Yeah, it's 1 out of 1,000. It points out how much more work there is to be done in this field.
Let's go to the phones. You ready for some more?
I'm ready.
Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, this is Richard from Cottage Grove.
That's in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yes.
Indeed. Go ahead,
Richard. Good evening, Richard.
Yes, I had a hole in my leg one morning when I woke up. It was about 1/4 inch in diameter. It was cylindrical. It was about 1/4 inch deep. There was no blood. There was no pus. And there was no pain even while it was healing. And it was in the left leg, in the calf, behind the, you know, below the knee. And there is a scar there. And I can send a picture if you wish. But I went to a doctor. The doctor didn't do any tests at all. Yeah. No lights, no nothing.
How do you think you got it, Richard?
I have no clue as to how I got it.
Spider bite? Is a spider bite? Maybe.
But there was no pain. I don't understand how it got there.
Well, there should be pain. There should be an infection with something like that. That's a case for Roger Lear, Peter.
Yes, it is. Roger Lear or Bud Hopkins or David Jacobs. We know that these scoop marks are oftentimes related to suspected abduction or interaction. The thing you have to do, though, is you've got to document it. You've got to take a photograph of it, preferably the instant you see it. Just as our witness earlier during the first hour photographed the wound on his foot, I compliment him for having done that. But you've got to photograph it. You've got to preserve the data. And the next time you see a doctor, ask the physician's opinion as to what might have caused it. And if that area of your body is ever x-rayed, be sure to have the physician or radiologist look at that area and see if there might be some kind of foreign body that can be identified there.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. Where are you calling from?
I'm from Atlanta.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
George, this is Bill. Of course, nice talking with you, Mr. Davenport. I've got a question for you. I've seen these UFOs before, starting when I was about 15 years old in Oklahoma. We was out rabbit hunting to find out that while we was hunting the rabbits, something was hunting us.
Yeah.
And I've seen them lights over Phoenix. I was coming into Phoenix one morning. I'm a cross-country truck driver about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I've seen 5 of them. And that's in what I call a wedge formation. Uh-huh. And one of them came out of there with some serious velocity, and I thought it was going to hit in the middle of the road. I couldn't really tell how far away I was, but there was a plateau on the north side of the road, and it was even with that thing. And so I got to where I thought it was at, and there was no dust, there was no hole in the road, so I don't know what happened to it. And it was just recently after that is when they seen all them lights around Phoenix. And here about, about 2 years ago now, maybe not quite 2 years ago, but I was on Interstate 75 running north almost into Kentucky, and it's kind of hilly or mountainous, rains through there, and I seen a shooting star change directions. Now, I know that sounds silly, but I swear to God, that thing changed directions.
Well, it doesn't sound silly to me because my experience suggests that some of what people construe to be shooting stars or meteors may not be meteors at all. They exhibit characteristics precisely as you've described that are incompatible with a typical meteor.
Well, I've done a lot of thinking on that, and if that was a really honest-to-God shooting star, what would make it change direction? Now, I've been in the military, and I've fired them tanks and them 50 calibers and them 30 calibers, and when you hit something solid, it'll change direction. Now, that's just exactly what this thing does. In that same manner, it changed direction so quick, it didn't lose no velocity at all.
Yeah.
Now, if it did hit something, if that was a meteorite and there was something up there, it had gone through it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes
it wouldn't have just glanced off.
I think I can answer your question, sir. Sometimes meteors can change their trajectory, particularly if they strike the Earth's atmosphere at a very shallow angle. They can skip, just like a stone skipping over the surface of water. But also there's the problem of parallax, how it appears to change its course when in fact it may not have. Sometimes meteors also can, as they slow down, if they're still glowing, if they start to fall, then their trajectory will appear to be bent downwards, if you will. But the important thing is, you've mentioned three cases, perhaps four, that you've seen. The important thing is to submit them in written form. Talking about them makes for excellent radio entertainment, but from a standpoint of investigation and research, the information has to be preserved in written form and sent to a center where it can be taken advantage of.
Okay, let's move on to our wild card line. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Brian. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, Brian.
And me and my son, Joey, and my niece, Miranda, are listening to you guys all the time.
I have a question. Hello, everybody. Go ahead.
Has there ever been any sightings in Wisconsin at all that you know of?
Good grief, sir. There have been many sightings. In fact, if you go to our website.
They're everywhere.
And go to our, we have 34,000 reports posted to the National UFO Reporting Center website now,
really?
UFOcenter.com, and you can sort all of those cases by the location of where they occurred or where the witnesses were who saw it.
I see.
And you can look at all of the cases for any given state or for any given country from which we have received reports from witnesses.
Okay, I got another question.
Mm-hmm.
What are these? I don't own a computer. What do these aliens look like, supposedly?
Well, there have been many people who have addressed that case. Dr. Jack Kasher, who's the Central Regional Director for the Central United States for MUFON, a very interesting gentleman up here in Seattle, David Chase, a young artist, has worked with people who allegedly have been in proximity to aliens. And there, it appears to be the case that there's not just one type, one species of alien. It appears that there are many different types, according to witnesses and witness reports. There are the reptilians, there are the Nordics, there are the Greys, Greys of all different types, the tall ones, the short ones, the hook-nosed
then
Greys.
Then the praying and mantis type also, right?
Oh, yes, and the praying mantis, perhaps one of the most alarming type, and the reptilians that appear very similar in some respects to a typical terrestrial reptile with scales, green skin, and so on and so forth. So there are many different types, it appears.
East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with Peter Davenport. Hi there.
Hi, Peter. I was wondering about the lights over Phoenix.
Ones are you speaking of now in March of 1997?
I believe so, because I haven't seen the reports, but what I have seen is a blueprint for a lighter-than-air stealth flying wing.
That story keeps cropping up, and it's like poison oak. We can't put a black stake through its heart and make it die the final death. Let me just say this, sir. The object that, or the several objects that were seen over the city of Phoenix and nearby communities as well, on Thursday night, the 13th of March, 1997, was not a stealth blimp. It was not. We have 1,500 written reports. We have videotape of the object. It was capable of supersonic flight. It was capable of accelerating at a blistering pace. It was intercepted by two F-15C fighters, allegedly. We have that on very good authority from inside Luke Air Force Base. And I would like to lay to rest once and for all the notion that that incident, or those incidents more accurately, were caused by a helium-filled blimp. It's not the case.
No, not a blimp.
A stealth device.
Yes, it's an aircraft carrier.
Yes, well, sir, it's just not the case. Aircraft carriers don't accelerate from a dead stop to very, very fast in the bat of an eye. It can't be done. So it was not caused by any kind of terrestrial craft that came from this planet. I am very sure of my statement.
Okay, great, Peter. Thanks for sticking to your guns on that. It's a bizarre
I hope
thing.
I didn't insult that
gentleman. Oh, no, not at all. He's calling for your opinion, and you gave it to him.
I did, and in spades, I'm afraid.
Bluntly, no doubt. Yes. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
Joe here from WRKO. Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good evening, Joe.
Good evening. George, I want to make a couple comments before I address my question. I want to apologize for all the people that have mistreated this man, because he is a wonderful man. Most CEOs don't give up their life work. You know, they rip off companies and do this. I would like to ask all the people to treat him with respect, and maybe someone will hire him, because he does this out of the goodness of his heart, and he's not selling any books and videos like your other guests. I would like you to talk to the powers to see whether you could get him a job, and then he would be much more easy, because you never know. He may need medical care someday and medical help, and a lot of us don't have insurance. So
all send him a dollar, he won't need a job.
Well, but he likes to work. And, you know, most people, CEOs, say rip off airline companies and do everything else and take their big retirement
and
run away.
That. And some of them now are starting to go to jail.
Yeah, I know. Should be the Peter Mike.
But anyways, go ahead, Joe. The clock's ticking.
Question is on the site. Can you give me a brief encapsulation of your site, because I can't see. Is it easy to read? And what, like, do your reports read? Do you have at the top 30,000 reports up to date January 5th? And maybe someday you will have films up there people will be able to download.
Joe is blind, Peter.
Yeah, I recognize the voice. This gentleman and I have spoken over the telephone. I know that for a fact.
Oh, yes.
And I'm terribly indebted to him for his kind words and his encouragement and request of our listeners. But, yes, I understand it would be difficult or impossible for you to see the website. Thanks to a very loyal, very capable webmaster, that site is designed to be as absolutely simple as we can possibly make it, and it emphasizes not waving flags and little jingles and all of this nonsense that one frequently sees on a website. It is strictly facts, information, reports, and things of consequence, things that, from my vantage point, have content to them that communicate a message. So we're planning a few changes on that website, but essentially all it is the best, most accurate, complete, cogent, convincing information with regard to the UFO phenomenon that I am capable of assembling and disseminating over a website.
Very good.
That's basically a thumbnail sketch of what our site is, Joe.
All right, west of the Rockies, let's take your call on Coast to Coast.
Gentlemen, great show tonight. I like your line there, George, about any fraction of a percent suggests new horizons of discovery and understanding with respect to this subject. And I just think that people should look in history at some of the ancient Renaissance art, some of the amazing sketches and paintings and in the frescoes of little Jetson cars and aerials.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And
yes.
Dogon in Africa, about their celestial awareness, and the Sumerian texts sort of correlate with that. I'd like to say I was a seraphim, but you wouldn't believe me anyway. But I'd just like to mention that I think that if you look at the global UFO increase in sightings, et cetera, that there's a phenomenon we're at work currently. It's my understanding they're removing the draconian element that's been running this show for several thousand years. And I believe that the War of the Worlds is a psyop, because the landings have started, the contacts have started, and they're here to help us get rid of our weapons of our end days weapons, and also get rid of the corrupt elements in our governments. And I just like to say that intent, positive thinking, and some spiritual outlook will help this planet greatly.
So, well, thanks for your comments. To the best of my knowledge, the reports, and the caller, I compliment him, he points out that the reports of UFOs are on the increase, and I think that's a better, more accurate statement than UFOs are more populous or more frequent on the planet Earth, because thanks to programs like this, people may simply be reporting their sightings more frequently of the same number of craft that appear to be here. So what it means, I don't know, but I compliment our caller for phrasing his question properly.
Peter, we're running out of time. I want to thank you for spending a couple hours with me and, more importantly, watching, I think, these incredible cases of UFOs for all of us, letting us know what's happening there. And one day I think we're going to bust through and get to the bottom of this story. And what I will promise you, Mr. Davenport, is if and when these 20 governmental officials decide they want to come forward and talk, I'm going to get you involved with me on this, and we're going to break this thing, and we're going to break it in a big way.
Boy, that sounds like a lot of fun, and I compliment you for doing that, George. That it sounds like 20 very capable, very talented people whose statements can be relied on. And that's going to make a big difference in this field, to waking people up to the fact that it appears to be real and it's taking place right now.
Absolutely. Peter Davenport, www.ufocenter.com. Get his address right off his website. And I mean this. Everybody, just send him $1. Keep that UFO Reporting Center up and running. $1 plus your stamp. You'll take care of Peter's operations for years to come. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with Open Lines, and get ready. I'm going to scare the living daylights out of you.